Hello, everybody. It's Larry Goins. How is everybody doing?
Evening, Larry.
Hello.
Hi there.
Yeah, good.
Awesome. Sounds like we got a good group on tonight. That's great. I'm sorry I'm running a few minutes behind. I was running late from getting home. I went and picked up a stand-up punching bag for my 9-year-old who's taking martial arts. I found it on Craigslist, so I went and picked it up and took a little longer than I thought. So I'm sorry, guys, but hey, we're here. So
are you trying to sell them something?
Do what?
Were you trying to sell them something?
No, but actually, the base had already been filled with sand, and I was by myself. So, you know, things work out in mysterious ways. There was a guy standing across the street outside on the telephone, and I just walked over there and asked him if he'd help me load it up in the car after I tried to get it in the car myself. So I offered to pay him, but he wouldn't take anything, so that was kind of funny. But I don't want to keep you guys waiting. Let's just jump right in. If you guys just – anybody has a question, jump out there. We'll just take them one at a time.
Do we have a question?
Anybody?
We're just here to listen tonight, Larry.
I'm sorry?
I said we're listening tonight.
You're going to listen tonight.
Okay.
Yeah, we have no questions, actually. We just came on to listen, see if we can pick up a tidbit.
Sure, that sounds good. We always got people that ask questions and stuff like that, so that's awesome. Anybody want to jump in here with a question? I did have a question earlier that someone submitted. I know you guys get emails every Monday asking you to submit questions if you want, and I did have a question submitted that said, how do you start if you don't have any cash or credit? Well, there's a lot of different ways you can start. The first way is you can work with direct for sale by owners because those contracts are the easiest to assign. And you can find those for sale by owners by running ads on Craigslist, by searching for ads on Craigslist of for sale by owners. You can also do direct mail to out-of-town owners. A lot of people do that. And what you do is, to do direct mail, you basically, here's your criteria right here. You can go to listability or listsource.com, listsource.com or listability.com, and you can find, and there's also melissadata.com, Melissa. M-E-L-I-S-S-A, data.com, all have lists you can buy. And what you want to do is you want to, whatever area you're going to buy in, you're going to find owners that have owned the property at least 10 years, and some of them have loan balance and or equity information. If they do, you want to find the ones that have at least 30% equity, and that'll be from the information that they have, which is actually going to end up being more equity. So so that way you know that that you got enough equity to work with. And you can do owner-occupants or non-owner-occupants. Some people only do out-of-town owners or out-of-state owners or non-owner-occupants. Some bail to both. Owner-occupants and out-of-town owner and out-of-town owners. And basically, you can mail a postcard or a letter. A postcard might say something along the lines of, you know, I'm an investor and I buy houses, any condition, cash. If you're interested in selling your house, I'm not a realtor. I am an investor. Or my wife and I are looking for a house. Or my husband and I are looking for a house. And I know a couple people that do it that way and say, you know, my wife and I are looking for a home or my husband and I are looking for a home, and they do it that way. So that's for sale by owners. That's one way to do define properties that you can assign and not have to have any cash except for the deposit or your and you don't need any credit. The other way you can do it is there's different ways to close without having to have any of your own money. And one of those ways is you can create a corporation or an LLC for a specific property and then sell the entire LLC. In other words, say you get a property under contract and the address is 125 Oak Street. You might create an LLC, 185 Oak Street LLC, and then you would make the offer in that LLC name, and then you could basically just sell the shares of the LLC at closing, and your buyer would take over ownership, and they would close on the property and pay you for the shares. Say you wanted to assign the property for $10,000, they would just pay you $10,000 for their for your interest in the LLC. Another way you could create a trust and assign the beneficial interest of the trust to your buyer. So what you would do is create a trust, and a trust is just a one-page document. Any attorney could do it. You would create that trust document, and basically you would change the beneficiary from you to your buyer. And that's another way to assign a non-assignable contract. Another way to do it is if you've got your buyer lined up, you can also use transactional funding. And transactional funding doesn't really care about your credit. All they really care about is if your buyer is lined up and they bring their money to closing, then that's all they're worried about. Another way is to do a simultaneous close, which basically means that you're using the attorney or title company you're using will allow you to use your buyer's money to fund your seller. Another way is to use an option. Instead of getting a property under contract to buy, you get it under option, and then you can sell your option. So those are quite a few ways right there that you can do a deal with no cash and no credit. And those are probably the most popular ways. There's some other ways as well, but those are probably the most popular ways. So somebody had submitted that question online earlier. I think maybe it was either yesterday or this morning. So I wanted to answer that one. So I hope that
Larry,
helped, and I hope they're on the line.
Larry?
Yes.
I have a question just regarding the name of the corporation or the LLC.
Right.
Is it a good idea to name it the address of the property, because if you don't end up not getting the property, then is your LLC kind of like not usable?
Well, you could. What some people do is some people will actually have a name that they like maybe, neighborhood housing properties, and then you could just add numbers to that, like Neighborhood Housing Properties 1, Neighborhood Housing Properties 2, Neighborhood Housing
right.
Properties 3, and so on.
Okay.
Now, what some realtors and some banks now, or asset managers, they've gotten wise to the fact that some people create LLCs that are the address of the property just to do that technique that I just shared with you. And some people aren't able to pull it off. So for that reason, some of them know about that technique and they question it. They want to make sure you have the money. So
right.
It can be a negative to name the LLC or the trust the address of the property. In commercial, it's not as unnormal or uncommon, so it wouldn't really be questioned there. But in residential, it's kind of uncommon because most people hold more than one residential property in an entity. But that was
right.
a really good question, and I hope that answered it.
Thank you very much, Larry.
Larry, when
welcome.
You're doing an LLC, should you have it in place before you get a contract on a property, or can you do it after the fact?
Well, technically you should have it in effect before, but I've seen some that are created just before the closing.
Okay.
But technically you should have it in place. Especially you should have it in place before your offer is accepted and everybody signs off on it. But I've
okay,
seen a
so
lot of them
have,
created just before the closing.
Okay. And you have to do an LLC in the state you're working in. It can't be just like a Nevada one. You have to get one for each, whatever state you're trying to buy in?
Nope, that's not true. You can get an LLC for whatever state you want to. However, that's a very good question. Some people like to have a Nevada corporation for tax purposes. So if you have, say if you wanted to create a Nevada LLC, you create a Nevada LLC, and that's with the Secretary of State. However, if you are going to be buying a property in, say, Tennessee, then your Nevada LLC will have to file for the Secretary of State for Tennessee for a document called Certificate of Authority to Transact Business in Tennessee. And usually it's $10 or $15 or $20, but all that is it puts the Tennessee Secretary of State on notice that you're doing business there, mainly just so they can send you an annual business report and find out what your revenue is there and tax you on it. That's the main purpose for that. And say if you did a deal in Tennessee and you had a Nevada corporation, and say you seller financed that house. Well, if you did not get certificate of authority to do business in Tennessee, and say your person defaulted on that loan and you went to file for foreclosure and you had to go through the court system, then they would look up and see that you don't have authority to do business there and you would not have access to the court system. So that's
okay.
Another reason to get certificate of authority to do business in whatever state the property is. So I hope that answered your question.
Okay, and you can carry, you can carry multiple LLCs, if I'm understanding you. Like if you say you're doing one in Tennessee and one in New York State or something, you'd have to have two LLCs?
No, you don't have to, but you can. It's entirely up to you. It's here's the way I suggest, and I like to work it. You want to have an entity for your houses you're flipping, and you want to have an entity for your houses that you are holding or seller financing.
Right.
So it's two different entities. You don't want to hold rental property in the same entity that you are flipping houses in. For tax purposes. So, for example, we have a couple of entities, and they're named very similar, but that way they're named very similar, but that way when it comes down to it, say if we thought we were going to flip a house and we decided, no, we're going to keep it as a rental, then that way we just tell them that they need to make a slight adjustment to the name. Like one name is Neighborhood Housing Group, and the other name is Neighborhood Housing Properties. And we would just tell them there's an error on the contract. You need to change the name from one to the other.
Okay, good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can and a lot of people, like if you're going to keep properties as rentals, you're not going to probably hold more than, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, whatever you feel comfortable with, in each entity. And then if you have a property that's maybe a higher risk property, like say you buy a mobile home park and it's a lower end mobile home park and you know there's probably some more liability there, then you're probably going to set up a separate entity just for that.
Right. Okay.
Yep. So I hope that helped.
Yep. Thank you.
Awesome. Good. Anybody else have a question?
Hey, Larry, another thing on that is, like, in some states, like in South Carolina, my LLC is from outside of South Carolina, so right at closing, I have to pay 5%. So that's another reason to have the LLC in that state.
So you have to pay 5% because your LLC is out of state?
Correct. It's just 5% of the net profit.
Of the net profit. Oh, for that state, yes.
I
see what you mean, of the net profit when you sell it, not when you buy it.
Right, at closing when you're selling it.
Right. That's a good point. That's a really good point. And that's something everybody should seek the advice of their tax preparer on. Cool. Good point. Thanks for bringing that up. Anybody else have a question?
I just bought a storage unit from the bank. How do I got some empty units? What's the best way to advertise it?
Are you talking about you bought a whole mini warehouse, so you have a lot of units that are empty you need to rent out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So that's a whole business right there. How many units do you have?
100.
Okay, good. How many are vacant?
About 25.
Okay. Well, you could run ads on Craigslist. Is there enough income coming in where you need somebody on site? Do you have like an on site office?
No.
Okay. All right. So Craigslist ads, a banner across the front of the building, flags out in front of the property. Any kind of thing like you would do for a new home subdivision. Signs out at the corner. Is it in a neighborhood where there's other businesses around?
Yeah.
Okay, so I would print out some flyers, and I would take them around to the businesses, and I would ask the businesses if you can, like, set them on the counter or set them in the window or whatever. anybody who's around local, any businesses around local like that, I would ask them.
Okay.
How about those ideas?
That sounds good.
Yeah, good. That's awesome. Is that your first mini storage?
Yeah. Yep.
Good. Well, good luck with it. That's awesome. Anybody else have a question?
Now, you're doing a lot of multifamily units these days?
Nope. I sure don't. I do mainly single family.
Okay. Are you having good success with the HUD? When I was doing it, I didn't get too many HUD. I tried to do your formula, but it seemed like I got many bites.
Well, you got to make a lot of offers. We probably make $2,000 to $3,000 a week.
Oh, wow. Okay.
How many offers
okay.
did you make?
I was making 25 a week.
Okay. Yeah, it might take you. How long did you do that?
About a month.
Okay. So you made about 100 offers. Well, one of the things we found, too, is HUD does not want to start negotiating and coming down until the property's been on the market 60 to 70 days.
Oh, okay.
That might help you. So I hope that helps.
Yeah.
Cool. Anybody else have a question?
What?
Oh, go ahead.
Larry?
Yes, sir.
We've been hearing that the inventory is going down because there's an uptake on the housing. How does that affect the strategies and affect us buying properties for closure and getting a profit like that?
How does it affect what?
How does it affect our strategies moving forward?
Oh, okay. It just means you're going to have to make more offers.
Okay.
And you're also going to probably have to do a little bit more due diligence up front because there's other people buying properties and bidding up the properties in a lot of different markets. And one of the things we've also found is there's not near as much competition when you get out of the cities, if that makes sense.
That makes sense, but isn't it based upon your buyers. So if the buyers are focused on the city, then we are sort of limited to that city area?
No, because most of the buyers who buy houses from us, they don't even live in the same state, much less the same city as the house.
I see.
So especially when you're wholesaling, just remember, a buyer is a buyer is a buyer.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yes, that helped a lot. You also talked about HUD not willing to negotiate until the property is on the market for 60 days or more.
For the most part,
Is there any other listing or any other website or resource that we can use to look for properties that are not HUD but on foreclosure?
Oh, yeah. We use Realtor.com every day. HUD is just one source that we use. The rest of them we're looking on Realtor.com, and then we're starting to do some for sale by owners, like I talked about earlier, some direct mail. You know,
okay,
as the market gets tighter and more people are bidding up the properties on the MLS, that's where you have to go for other sources, like I mentioned earlier, the FSBO sources.
I think I missed 5 minutes or 10 minutes of the call.
I was talking about some sources earlier, and sources like you go to melissadata.com, and you look for a list of homeowners in your area or wherever you're going to buy, but you look for the list of homeowners that have owned at least 10 years, have at least 30% equity, and you can do owner-occupant, but for the most part, you probably want to do non-owner-occupant, you know, out-of-town owners. So you could do that and just mail out a postcard to them that my wife and I are looking to buy a house in your area and noticed you were out of town, wanted to see if you would be interested in selling your house, or my husband and I, or whatever. And or you could say, if you want to, you could say, I'm an investor, and I buy houses and pay cash. If you're interested in selling your property, please give me a call. I want to make an all-cash offer on your house.
Would you mind repeating the website again? Sorry, I'm Larry.
Sure. Melissa, M-E-L-I-S-S-A, Data, D-A-T-A.
Okay.
There's some other ones that I mentioned too, listability.com. Listability and listsource.com.
Great, thank you.
Oh, sure, no problem. Hope that helped. Anybody else have a question?
I have another question if no one's asking anything.
Sure.
You were talking about looking on Realtor.com. I didn't know that there was. How do you search keywords? How do you search for those things? Because I assume that I know there's
a
lot of.
We don't search keywords, but like you could search specific areas, and then with the number of bedrooms and number of baths that you're interested in. And you can widen out your search area to include like 20 miles out or all the different cities in the area. And you're able to do that. And we use Realtor.com quite a bit, actually.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. I kept thinking only HUD or stuff.
Oh, no. HUD's just one source.
What?
Yeah. Anybody else have a question?
Yes, Larry.
Yes, sir.
I was wondering if there was any type of protocol that you would use to make bids. I mean, I realize, like, you know, you could make an online bid to these different REO websites for different properties they have.
Right.
And I was wondering, would you have a submit like a letter to them, because you'd be going online, you know, trying to bid on properties, and if they don't know you, they're not really familiar with you. And I was just wondering, is there any kind of protocol to attack those different types of REO websites, you know, like Bank of America or Chase, Fifth Third, you know, that kind of thing?
Yeah, and there's a lot of them out there. There's also sites like auction.com, hudsonandmarshall.com, williamsandwilliams.com, and hubzoo.com, H-U-B-Z-U.com. So there's a lot of sites out there, but they all have different criteria, I've noticed. Like auction.com, you got to submit like a copy of a bank statement or something like that. Give them
Oreo.
And they also, I've noticed auction.com, they're going to charge you a minimum of $2,500 for every property that you get an offer accepted. And it's a minimum of $2,500.
Okay.
But so different ones have different criteria.
I see. Well, so you'd have to just maybe, you know, if they have a number on there, contact somebody with a number that's on their website or something.
Yeah, well, you just have to go to each individual website and follow their instructions for registering. And it would be even
okay.
Good practice, even if you're not going to bid on some of those, it would be good practice to learn what they do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I'll try that then.
Oh,
yeah. I'll try to actually go ahead and register on to them. And I was just wondering, would it be necessary to have like a letter, you know, I'm so-and-so, I'm a real estate investor and I'm looking for properties, or just register first and then, you know, see what they come back with?
Well, you need to register first and see what they ask you, because with those sites, a letter doesn't really mean that much. They're going to tell you what they need, and that's all that they're going to ask for, is whatever they need from everybody.
Okay.
And there's some of those sites, I can't remember which one, there's one of them I know of, you got to actually put up a deposit just to bid on it. I can't remember which one. It might be auction.com, but I can't remember. But yeah, I would check it out just to kind of get familiar with the different kinds of auction sites.
I've been on a couple of, well, I've actually registered for a couple, Wells Fargo and Fifth Third. Those two I've actually registered and stuff like that, but the way Fifth Third does it, you would go into like their bank branch and ask to speak to
asset manager?
Yes, that's what I was thinking of, asset manager. And then they would call them and then have them call you.
Right. Huh. That's interesting.
But that's, you know, that's just how they do it. But I'm not familiar with Wells Fargo. I'm going to look into that.
Right. Yeah, you can check into that. Wells Fargo does have their own REO department too. And, you know, you might be able to get something from them. But all those properties are going to be listed on Realtor.com.
I see.
You know, instead of going to the individual bank's website, I think you would be better off just to go to Realtor.com and then use, you know, auction.com and Hudzoo and Hudson and Marshall and all those other ones for the other properties.
Okay, I got it. They're all, by being REO, they're going to be looking for another way to channel those properties out, and they end up being channeled out through Realtor, right, and some other ones.
Well, they're all going to be put on the MLS. Every bank-owned property is going to be put on the MLS.
Okay.
Because think about it, the banks aren't going – I mean, think about it, the shareholders of the banks are in no way going to allow, you know, the banks not to publicize their REOs and get as much money for them as they can, or at least try to.
Mm-hmm.
91 milliliter. Cool. Well, I hope that helped.
Yeah, I will. There's another one, I don't know if you're familiar with, that's similar to that, to Realtor. It's called Homes by Lender.
Uh-huh.
It's similar to that. So, okay.
That one.
So it comes down to the individual property. You know, you if you're interested in that property, then you'd call the number for that person. You know, it might be a listing agent or the realtor. And I guess my question was, I was wondering, was there a way that you could go directly to the bank with these REOs?
Well, like I said, the problem is you can go directly to the bank, but the way the whole process works is a bank forecloses on a property. Then they hire an asset manager to manage that asset and dispose of it. Well, what they do is they get a realtor to give them a BPO. They send somebody out there to secure the house, winterize it, change the locks on it. And then once they get their BPO, then they're going to list the property. Okay? Then they're going to list the property. And they're going to, find some agent to list the property. And it may or may not be the same agent that gave them the BPO. Okay?
Yes.
Yeah. So they're going to use a, an asset manager, and then the asset manager is going to hire an agent.
Okay, so then there isn't too much significance then in just, going with the REO bank sites anymore. It doesn't sound like it, because
if they can go through sites like Wells Fargo and Bank of America and BB&T, they have their own REO site, but when it says to get more information about the property, then what they do is, when it says get more information on the property, it has the realtor's phone number on it.
Okay. I remember seeing that with Fifth Third also.
Yeah.
They would refer
they're
going to
have the
realtor's
contact information.
Mm-hmm.
Because the banks don't sell houses direct unless they're going to sell them in bulk.
Okay.
That's the only time you'll find that you can buy one directly from the bank.
Okay, thanks a lot for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. I hope that helped.
Yes.
Yeah, good. Anybody else have a question?
I had a question about obtaining private money. Going back to like a question I had a couple of weeks ago about the individual lists.
Uh-huh.
And I was wondering if you knew anything about like there's supposed to be like certain rules and regulations about how you have to take like applications or something like that from private lenders. In order to use them, it's something about the SEC, but I didn't quite understand how that worked. But I was wondering, was there a certain way that you would do it? You explained it to me as far as the sending out, I believe it was yellow letters. That was one way.
Yeah, well, what you want to do is you want to solicit people that you already have a relationship with about private money.
Okay.
You also want to make sure that if you borrow private money, that it's secured by the real estate and that you don't pool any money together. In other words, you're not having five people put up $10,000 each to buy a $50,000 house for you. Okay? You want to make sure that it's really a loan. It's a private money loan on a property. And the best way to do that is just find other people who are already loaning private money. And what you do is you go to your local REIT group, real estate investors group, and you will ask around who's using private money, and you get their business card because they're not going to tell you who their private money lender is. So what you do is you just get their business card, and then you go down to the courthouse. Some of them you can look up online, and you look up at the courthouse and look up their business name that they buy properties in, and then look up the deed of trust or mortgage, depending on the state it's in, and it will tell you who their lender is. There's your private money lender right there. Because if they're loaning money to one person, why wouldn't they loan to another person? So there's your lender right there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a really good little trick right there.
Can't hide that one, huh?
Exactly. Exactly. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, Larry?
Yeah.
That's Kevin from Michigan. Could you repeat what you just said about the private money? I missed that part.
Oh, sure. What you do is to find a local private money lender, you're going to go to your local real estate investors group and ask around who's using private money. You know, we're just in conversation, you know, well, how do you fund your deals? Well, I use private money. Oh, cool. All right, well, give me one of your business cards. Maybe I can wholesale you a house or something. They give you one of their business cards. It says XYZ Property Investments. You go down to the courthouse. You look up XYZ Property Investments, and you look up any properties they've bought, and then you look and see who their lender is listed on the deed of trust. And it's going to say Bob Johnson at P.O. Box whatever, or it's going to say, you know, Bob Johnson Private Lending or whatever, if he uses a company or something. And then you just look that company up at the Secretary of State and get his address, or a lot of times the address is actually on the documentation. So, or you can just do a Google search and find it. But it's a great way to find private lenders that are already loaning money to other investors.
Okay, so people at your local REIT group would be the ones you contact to get that information? Is that what you said?
They're going to be the ones you contact to find out who is actually using private money. But they're not going to come out and say, oh, yeah, I'm working with this guy, and he's got millions of dollars. Here, you call him. He might loan you money, too. Nobody's going to do that, okay?
Oh, yeah.
Nobody's going to tell you who their lender is. They've got a private money lender lined up. So what you have to do is be a little sneaky about it. And if they say, yeah, I use private money, okay, cool. You know, and then you say, well, give me one of your business cards, and we'll see if we can't do some business together. They give you their card. You write down their name. You look it up at the courthouse and see the property that they own. And then you look up the deed of trust, and there's your private money lender.
Oh, that's a good way to get it. The equity trust or the IRA accounts, there's a lot of people out there that want to lend money. I always try to figure out how to get those kind of people. Is there a way you can find those people?
Well,
through?
There is, but you just about got to know where they are currently lending money. But what you can do is, say if you're in the Charlotte, North Carolina market, you could do a search in the courthouse under lenders for equity trust or any of the other self-directed IRA or self-directed retirement account custodians. And then you, because most of them are like equity trust, FBO, which stands for the benefit of, and then whoever's name is on the retirement account. So you could look those up as well. And then there'll be a place on there that says mail documents after recording to, and it'll probably have that lender, the lender's address. Sometimes it's going to be equity trust, and you might just have to mail it there, and then they send it to the actual person. But sometimes you can get the actual address. But they would have to already be lending money in that area or in that market, because you could only look it up at the courthouse.
So you go to the website and find this information?
Yeah, you go to the Register of Deeds website. You can find any Register of Deeds website anywhere in the country by going to NACO.org. That's NACO.org. That stands for National Association of Counties. And on the top left, it says Find a County. You click on Find a County. It'll give you a map of the U.S. You click on your state, and then it'll give you a list of all the counties. You click on the county that you want, and then at the top it'll have a link right to their website. And then from the county's website, you find the Register of Deeds.
Okay. Let me write that down. NAC.
Well, it's going to be self-explanatory once you get there. All you need to know is NACO.org.
NACO.org.
Uh-huh. Or let's say you were looking for Mecklenburg County, which is in Charlotte, Register of Deeds. You could just go to Google and type in Mecklenburg County, North Carolina, Register of Deeds, and then it would probably pop up there on Google instead of having to go through NACO.org.
Okay, say it again. Go to Google.
Go to Google and type in the name of the county and the name of the state and the words Register of Deeds.
Okay.
There you go.
And that's how you find private lenders.
It's a way to find private lenders. It sure is.
All right. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. Anybody else have a question?
Yeah, just one on that. Are you up the creek without a paddle? When the other day I called the court and they said that they're not online and I'd have to come in to get that info.
Well, here's another thing you can do. It might cost you a little bit of money. You can go in. Are you close to the county where you called?
2 hours away.
Okay. Well, what you could do is you could call up and you could ask for the phone number for the records room. That's where all their records are located. And the only people that are in there typically are abstractors, title researchers. And you could call up and you could say, hey, I'm looking for an independent researcher that wants to make a little bit of money. And then you tell them what you're looking for. I'm looking for custodians, or I'm looking for private lenders for XYZ property investments, or I'm looking for custodians with the name Equity Trust, Intrust, Camaplan. You just name out all the different self-directed retirement accounts and ask them to look up one of those that are showing up as lenders, and send you their contact information. And tell them you'll pay them X number of dollars per record, or, you know, $100 or whatever it is. But that's one way to do it. And you just hire an abstractor, because there's phones in all those records rooms, and a title abstractor will answer the phone. Because a lot of times they're in there every day and they know each other, and just one of them will answer the phone, you know, and there's four or five or eight or ten of them in there researching stuff. And, you know, it's a good way to find a good abstractor to help you. That's what they call a title researcher, is an abstractor. So I hope that helped. Anybody else have a question?
Thank you.
Are those people that do that for a living, or are they found within that county register?
Now, what about doing for a living?
The abstractor. Are there people that do that for a living?
Yes, they do. There's independent abstractors. And then there's also some that work for attorneys as a paralegal. But there's also independent ones that attorneys will hire. Like, say an attorney gets a closing. The realtor sends over all the information. The attorney might just have his secretary call up to the records room and talk to one of the abstractors and say, hey, I need a title search on 125 Oak Street. You know, and they know that they'll charge them $75 or whatever to do that, and then they send over all the details, and then the attorney writes it up on their documentation and pays the abstractor. The abstractors, a lot of times, just send the attorney's bills because they have relationships with them. So, yes, they do it for a living. There's independent ones, and there's ones that work for attorneys or title companies. Anybody else have a question?
Larry, is this call recorded?
Yes, it is recorded, and we will be posting it. We'll be sending out a link. I have messed up on a couple of them about recording them, but I did start the recording on this one before I ever came online.
Okay, thank you.
You're very welcome. Anybody else have a question? Well, guys, I really appreciate you being on. I hope everybody got a lot out of this tonight. There was a lot of good questions today. And don't forget, if you ever have any questions in the meantime, don't hesitate to shoot me an email. And Larry@LarryGoins.com is my email address. Just put Inner Circle in the subject line and ask your questions. And we really, really, really appreciate your business and look forward to hearing your success stories. And don't hesitate to let us know if we can help you with anything. And be sure and be on here again in 2 weeks, and we'll see you then. So thanks a lot, everybody. I hope you guys have a great night.
You too, Larry.
Thank you, Larry.
Thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Good punching bag.